Heterodorks. Heterodox dorks.
Well, hello, TERFs and trannies. You're listening to yet another episode of Heterodorks. I am your co-host, Corinna Cohn. I am an activist for murdering children. Is that right? That's what I'm accused of.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Blood on your hands. There's blood on
blood
your
on
hands.
Blood on my hands.
Okay. Yeah. My name is Nina Paley, and I'm a canceled artist with a cat who is being rather aggressive right now. And TERFs and trannies, we have a special guest, Heterodorks, today. She is both heterodox and a dork. So definitely on brand for this podcast. Please welcome Erin. Is it Terrell or Terrell?
Terrell.
Erin Terrell.
Yep.
And I should add, welcome, Erin. As soon as we started doing the pre-show, Nina reverted to her pronoun policy and referred to Erin as he, because Nina's pronoun policy is that all the trannies are called he.
My real pronoun policy is to use sex-based pronouns. However, these freaking female trannies and their testosterone and their passing and their facial hair, it's so hard. It just, you know, the brain just, I got the policy and my own brain frequently refuses to comply. So yeah, in real life, it's easier because there are other cues, but the facial hair, man, it just, it's like if I had facial hair, I would pass, I think. Would I? No.
No, there's quite a few FDMs that, yeah, have that going on and they don't pass. Yeah.
Well,
thanks for having me, guys. Stoked to be here.
Thank you for coming. So, Erin, you are so heterodox and you are pretty brave on Twitter, where you're just saying stuff that no one else is going to say, and you know people are going to come for you, and you say it anyway, and that's pretty cool.
I think I have this fault in my brain that I don't decipher like social consequences. Like if there's not going to be a physical consequence, if there's not going to be a violent response, or I'm not going to be imprisoned for something I'm saying, if it's just like people are going to be mad. It's like my brain doesn't have that aversion that I think most people do and should have, because I would starve alone on the savannah in any other period in time. But yeah, I don't know. I kind of like being contrarian too. I don't do it to be contrarian. I do it because I feel like it's the truth that I have deduced, and I feel like it should be said. But yeah, I just don't mind when people get mad at things I say. I mind when I'm misunderstood and people are like respond like kind of, you know, putting in my, like, assuming ideas I don't hold or saying that I'm saying something I'm not saying.
Yeah.
That I really I have a negative emotional response to. But just in general, like being at the bottom of a dog pile or something doesn't on its own.
But that's the whole thing with internet rage, is that they intentionally misunderstand. They intentionally claim that you're saying things that you're not saying. For example, you're defending perverts.
Yep. I'm a pervert advocate.
Yeah, pervert advocate, probably pedophiles also. So let's delve into that. You have thoughts about autogynephilia and autoandrophilia.
Yes. Lots of thoughts. Which ones in particular?
Oh,
can we do a quick definition? Because I think a lot of people, well, how about this? Not even a quick definition, because I think that there's a lot of various conceptions about what autogynephilia, aka AGP, actually is, or what people believe it is. And a less known term is autoandrophilia. So can you give us some definitions of what those even mean? From your point of view?
Yeah, definitely. So it's sexology lingo, right? So auto meaning self, gyno or andro, gyno meaning woman or female, andro meaning male or man, and then philia, love, or as I like to say less euphemistically, sexual attraction. So yeah, those terms, especially autogynephilia, has such a bad rap in the gender critical sphere, just because I think the feminists correctly deduced that it's a good way to shatter the illusion of gender ideology by pointing out this is a male paraphilia for being a woman. It's not a gender identity. It's not this. I mean, in a lot of ways, the trans activists are kind of right when they do that gay conflation where it's like, oh, D-trans people are always going to retransition because you, just like you can't cure gay, you can't cure trans. They're coming from a place of an autogynephilic perspective where it's like those feelings, no, they're not going to go away. Again, I'm kind of going off the, need to get back to the definitions, right? So yeah. Autogynephile is simply a male who is attracted to the idea sexually and or romantically of being a woman. There's nothing in and of itself harmful or dangerous about that. It can create really negative body feelings for the person who experiences it. So if it can be avoided, if it can be ignored, great. That's the better way to go. If it can't, if it's all encompassing and you have no external gynophilic attraction, then you're kind of shit out of luck, really. I mean, it's like, it's not going to go away. You can't rework it. But unfortunately, a lot of people who have this sexuality are very badly behaved. And they, I think most, not so that they're inherently badly behaved, that's not the case. The gender ideology that this sexuality hides underneath enables a lot of boundary violations and a lot of sexual coercion, etc. It's essentially encouraged by the ideology that says having this feeling or having this sexuality means you literally are a woman and are entitled to lesbian spaces, women's single-sex facilities, the girls' sports teams if you're a boy. And that's what a lot of people don't understand is the boys who are transitioning, the ones who transition or who identify as female post-pubescently, they're by and large autogynephilic. But because people have this association of this middle-aged fetish, they don't see it for what it is. Really, it's just a boy who's misdirected his heterosexuality. And these are the boys who are, again, beating the girls in the track and field teams and whatnot, or whatever the sports are. That's not the ones on the sports teams in the high schools. Those definitely aren't the gay boys. Regardless of transitioning or not, gay boys don't care about sports. So the ones on the girls' teams, those are autogynephiles. They're not necessarily there to gain access to their locker rooms. They're there because they have this sexuality that in our current culture tells them it means they're girls. And then all of the institutions facilitate this and encourage it. My MO in all of this, well, it originally was about explaining what's going on for the girls and young women, but that kind of morphed into this once I kind of understood it and realized how poorly it's understood by everyone else trying to fight the ideology, is that in order to combat the danger that is gender ideology, we have to understand the reality of what is driving the males. And we need to understand it with empathy for their experience and while at the same time maintaining appropriate boundaries. And I feel like if we can't do the first, if we can't approach this with like empathy for that experience, then there's no way to actually combat the ideology, because all the people who have that experience are obviously going to keep propping up the ideology, because without it, they're a dangerous pervert. But with it, they're a lovely woman.
I guess it's sort of cliche because it gets mentioned so often, but isn't it Sun Tzu who said something about you should always let your enemies have a place where they can retreat? It's sort of a similar mentality that if you have this group that you're combating and that the only option that you give them is to fight you, then they're just going to keep fighting you.
Yeah.
So empathy and boundaries.
Both. Correct.
Yep. I like it. I want to hear more about autoandrophilia, because a lot of people claim it doesn't even exist.
They do. They claim it doesn't exist on the grounds that women don't have paraphilias. And this is another battle of mine these days, is semantics. I hate the overemphasis on semantics. So women don't have paraphilias. Okay, what does that mean? Women don't have unusual compulsive sexual behaviors, typically. Certainly in far less quantities than males do. Yeah, you see very, very few female pedophiles or sexual sadists or voyeurs or whatever. And I think it does come mostly back to the fact that female sexuality isn't compulsive and male sexuality is.
Hmm.
Is kind of the defining difference here. But I...
Whoa, okay, compulsive. Can you expand on that a little bit? Having had my own experiences with my own female sexuality?
Yeah, but please remember the show is R-rated, so make it juicy.
Yeah. Okay, we'll put music on later.
So I think female sexuality is much more diluted relative to male sexuality. Women have much more control over their, maybe not sexual feelings or sexual desires, but their sexual responses, like the physical compulsion or the physical, I don't really know how to describe this, or maybe I'm not doing it justice. Let's back up a bit. I personally believe myself to be autoandrophilic. That's only something that I came to the realization of within the last year or two, because it never felt sexual. It was very sentimental. So like I couldn't differentiate who I was attracted to and who I wanted to be. It was the same feeling of attraction and envy. My feelings of dysphoria was always what you could call autogynephobia. Like I was repulsed by everything female about my body and felt that I should have a male body, because that's not consciously, but I realized after the fact, is because that's what I found value in. And it felt like there was a disconnect between what my body was and what I felt it should be.
I've had that body dysmorphia. And I, you know, when I was younger, I definitely wished I were, if not male, then less female. Like it really bothered me that I had curves. I really wished I were angular, you know, just angular and lean and muscular. And
Yep. Go on.
Oh, well, I think at one time, autoandrophilic would have been an adequate or a reasonable description of me. I was, you know, and some of that has to do with my childhood and insecure attachments with men and sort of building my own man in myself. Like when I hear about these trans maxers, mm-hmm. like I'm going to be my own girlfriend. And yeah, I found that I was attracted to men that had attributes that I wanted. And there was this like, well, yeah, wouldn't I want to be him? But it was so not sexual the way a male fetish is sexual. It was so much more just like social, not even so like societal, like my place in society, my role. I wanted respect. And yeah, I still don't even know what it was all about. Sorry, I interrupted you. Please continue.
No. I appreciate it. Yeah, because I think these feelings of autoandrophilia are quite common. And my more controversial opinion view is that it's actually quite common amongst butch lesbians, and that's what facilitates the masculine presentation. The masculine identity is actually autoandrophilia, the latter result of which is gynophilic attraction, because it's the relationship with the feminine that that manifests the masculine in the self. And this also explains why so many butch lesbians start taking testosterone and then start dating men, is because that real underlying androphilia is no longer, it can no longer be ignored when you turn libido up to 11.
Oh, now that's gonna enrage that. No wonder people are furious at you. So you're saying that many butch lesbians deep down are heterosexual.
I'd call them pretendbians.
Now,
they're the ones who get mad at the trans women the most too, I bet.
Oh, really? Like,
there's some There's some butch, some allegedly butch lesbians. The insecurity because they have the same sort of thing going on, but the other way.
You know? Oh my gosh, these are fighting words. All right, I gotta say, like as a like when I think of maybe I haven't been in enough lesbian scenes, but in general, when I think of butch lesbians
scenes,
yeah.
Oh, keep going.
But when I think of butch lesbians, I think of like women who, well, maybe I'm thinking of this wrong. I guess in San Francisco, there was a strain in the 90s of, well, like super fucked up, super kinky, super like BDSM women who called themselves lesbians. But those were like sort of kink extremists. And I could imagine so-called butch lesbians that were actually repressed heterosexuals being among them. But most so-called butch lesbians are just women who they just don't do any of the feminine performance in my experience. They're just like, maybe I'm wrong though. I don't know.
Well, let's go back to what you were saying, Nina, about the when you were talking about your experience of autoandrophilia and how it was all social and complicated, and now you can't even really work out what those feelings are or where they came from, but it did have to do with your sexual orientation and your attraction to men and wanting to embody that. And this is what I'm talking about. Female sexuality is so different than male sexuality, and that it's so bound up in identity and socialization and interpersonal relationships. And whereas male sexuality is just a physical force, right? And it's not that complicated. And so when you're saying, oh, but you know, I wouldn't call it autoandrophilia because it's not fetishistic, but I believe it's the exact same source feeling. It's just going to manifest differently between males and females because of that sexual difference, right? So female sexuality isn't fetishistic at all. There's a study actually of FTMs. Gay FTMs, so male attracted females who had transitioned to on testosterone, who in my opinion probably autoandrophilic. They studied those alongside actual gay males, and the gay males were 10 times more likely to fetishize male clothing than the what I would consider autoandrophilic FTMs, right? Because it's female sexuality is not fetishistic. Whereas, so I believe autogynephiles are coming from have the same root problem that I do, which is an inability to differentiate the external attraction and the self, like what the self should be and what you're attracted to. So it's that inability to differentiate. But in a male, that's going to be super turned on by women's clothing or, you know, like immediate erection at the thought of being a woman. Whereas for females, it's going to be much more subtle and complicated because female sexuality just is.
Interesting. So were you heterosexual before you went trans?
Yep. Yeah, strictly attracted to men. Yeah.
Interesting.
Were you in a relationship?
Yeah. Yeah. Been in a couple. Well, three serious ones, one very serious long-term one.
Oh,
yeah.
I mean, when you started transition, were you dating a man or married
to
a man?
No. I've been single for a while. Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
How old were you when you transitioned?
27 when I decided to, and 28 when I started taking testosterone.
Interesting. So before then, did you perform femininity at all? Or
no.
Were you just...
No. Yeah. Occasionally, like events or whatever, like, you know, I'd put on a dress, I just felt really uncomfortable, put on makeup or whatever, I always felt really, really uncomfortable. But occasionally, no, I was pretty much just like a tomboy well into adulthood. Yeah.
And were you freaked out when men were attracted to things about your body that you were just not into?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. I remember having a lover who said like, oh, Nina, you're all woman. And I was like, like, do you even know me? Did not like that.
Maybe he was comparing you to his other lovers.
I think with a lot of men, so many men, that I have been with, it's like they read books, or more likely they watch porn, or, you know, they just like act out what they've seen. Like, I don't even know how, like, real sincere sexual experiences are rare because people are so affected by media, and men especially are so affected by media. And so often being with men is just like being with someone regurgitating some garbage that they consumed, using you as a prop. And I'm pretty sure that's what he was doing. But he thought it would be romantic or something. I don't know. Like, he thought that's what a woman wants to hear, because some man told him that's what a woman wants to hear.
I don't know. I think maybe a lot of women do want to hear stuff like that. I don't know.
But I think it
sounds cheesy either way. But
yeah, I think so much of, I mean, this is back to the complicated societal stuff. So much of our social understanding of womanhood was created by men. And I think about that song from Flower Drum Song, "I Enjoy Being a Girl." Have you ever seen that? Have you, Corinna?
Yeah, you've sent that to me before.
Yeah, it's like the ultimate autogynephile song. But they used a woman to sing it. So it's written by men, produced by men, all men. And it's this woman saying, "I enjoy being a girl." And it's all like, you know, putting the powder puff on her face and wearing the lace and wearing the heels.
It kind of sounds like a lot of Taylor Swift songs were written by an autogynephile, but she apparently writes her own music. So maybe she's one of those rare actual female autogynephiles, because it does sound like someone who's like really getting off on being a woman, which is interesting.
Well, would you call that an autogynephile?
I just call that marketing.
But like a circumautogynephile? Yeah.
I wouldn't take pop songs to be too autobiographical.
Okay. Right. Anyway, yeah. So back to the autoandrophile experience that I keep interrupting. So
it sounds like a theme park.
The autoandrophile. I think it probably feels like a theme park, right? A roller coaster.
It's a lot of Ellen Page movies. Sorry.
Right. So what do you think is up with Ellen Page? Right? Like, first she says she's a lesbian.
Yeah.
And then she does it. So you think that, like, I mean, what could possibly be going on with her?
My very unpopular belief that autoandrophilia motivates a lot of gynophilic behavior in females. Yeah, it's definitely Elliot Page. The way that I do the pronoun thing. So the way that he describes his gender dysphoria is very exactly the way I experience gender dysphoria. It's very just feeling alienated from your body. And then the kind of joy when that feeling of disgust and discomfort slowly evaporates. I can clearly tell the difference between someone who has an autoandrophilic, or let's say an auto heterosexual experience of gender dysphoria. And that is, it's a very self-obsessed internal problem where you, deep disconnect and often alienation and disgust by our bodies. That's not something that homosexual transsexuals experience, at least not many. It's some of the genuinely gynophilic, well, maybe not.
It's something most women experience. I mean, women, at least in my day, we were all socialized to hate our bodies. We were all socialized to say, like, oh, this is so gross, and like, ooh, you know, this is fat, or ooh, I want to get rid of this. And still, women, like my contemporaries, will get together and talk about how they want some part of their body removed, or they want some plastic surgery procedure. There's real, like, narcissistic disgust that was encouraged.
Well, don't you think that's just kind of like vanity? And obviously women are trained to, you know, be, or is it nature, whatever element of nature or nurture, where women are hyper self-conscious about their physical appearance, but being fixated on having male body parts and feeling that your female body parts are incorrect is a different experience, I think, than feeling like your boobs are too small, or your butt's too small, or your thighs are too fat. All can cause serious psychological upset. Like, I'm not saying one's valid and the other is just being, you know, vain. I think those are distinct experiences, though. It's like,
well, what they have in common is the hatred of the body you have and the disconnect from the body you have. So I guess in the case of a true autoandrophile, they would want male body parts. Like, I never wanted that. I never wanted actual male body parts. I just hated my female body parts. I mean, if I could have had no body at all and been a brain in a jar, I would have. I had body issues. I had problems with reality. I had
biology dysphoria.
Problems with embodiment. Yeah, just embodiment. Like, which I think is even more common now that all this generation's been raised by the internet.
Yeah.
But yeah, body dysmorphia. Real disconnect between what how I thought I appeared and how I actually was, and disgust. And, you know, it's like eating disorders were just rampant in my cohort. And this is all part of eating disorders. And as you know, the transing of girls sort of replaced eating disorders, or I guess augmented eating disorders among girls. But the motivation for that is this real like hatred and just some sort of desire for control, like mastery. Like you have this shit body and you don't identify with it. You find it disgusting. And then you're like, and then you starve it. you show it who's boss.
Yeah, the puberty and then, yeah, the anorexia or the dysphoria or whatever it is. It's clearly a case of, yeah, the developing female body is suddenly like, yeah, to be fought against.
It's interesting that among boys who are trans-identified, that eating disorders are not uncommon either.
Yeah, everybody hates their... I mean, being embodied is really hard, and...
Some people love their bodies.
Yeah, some people. I gotta say, like, among girls in my generation, that was... I'm sure some did, but that was rare. Like, it was so common. In fact, if you were a girl in college, when I was in college, and you loved your body, you would keep that to yourself when you were with other girls because they bond by talking about how ugly they are.
That's what I was just thinking, though. Doesn't that tell you something? Like if you are comfortable in your body, and if you like, you're not going to hear about that from anyone. Just like today, if you don't feel like you're being victimized in some way. You know, nobody's going to talk about that because you bond over being victimized in some way. A lot of girl culture I was very uncomfortable with and couldn't adapt to. That was one of those things. The ironically, was the body rumination. I could not talk about my body. You know, I did not want to hear about their bodies. Like, I did not. I was definitely left out of those conversations, fortunately, or self-excluded, let's say. Oh, but yeah, I never did the anorexia thing. Never did the cutting thing. Never did the, I felt like, like I, and maybe it was somatization where it's, but no, it was very, very specific to me what on my body was a problem.
Yeah. It's not too late, Aaron. You could try developing an eating disorder.
Yeah. Yeah. Give it a go. Yeah. Were you being sarcastic, though, about the boys with eating disorders? Because I've done a lot No? Okay. Okay.
No, I don't think it's as common with the girls by any measure, but pretty common.
Okay.
Why?
Oh, I just haven't encountered it, I guess.
I think for people who are obsessed with their appearance, I think eating disorders are common.
It's a form of control.
I mean, same with like weightlifting and, you know, bodybuilding, all body sculpting.
I just do not have the self-control to have an eating disorder.
Well, there are eating disorders that would work for your type.
Yeah, they're not all anorexia. There's all kinds. But whatever it is, it's like using food to try to control as a control attempt, which is a way of coping with feeling out of control.
We were talking to Jamie Reed recently, and she was mentioning that a lot of the females that would young females, adolescent females that would go to the be seen at the gender clinic were noticeably unhealthily obese.
Mm.
So there's another way of having body control, right? You turn yourself into somebody who's physically unhealthy to look at, then people won't look at you as a sexual object, right?
I think one thing that Nina, you and I wouldn't have had to deal with when we were younger is internet porn. I think that's doing absolute number on girls' developing minds and like that kind of body loathing, or just, I mean, I couldn't imagine dealing with that. Plus the kind of porn that they get have access to at like the ages of like 10 or 11 years old, it's just violent and degrading. And this is what they understand to be heterosexual relationships. Of course, they're noping out as quickly as possible.
Yeah. I didn't have to see that, but even without porn, there's just a constant barrage of images of women and the way women are supposed to be. And you, of course, see how you'll get treated different ways according to how you look. And it's clear that men like women that look a certain way and behave a certain way. And so if you want to be liked, you'll behave that way. And it's clear that if you don't look that way, people are going to be a lot less nice to you.
Yeah.
In fact, when I started doing drag, when I was living in San Francisco and started wearing makeup for the first time and a wig because my head was shaved at the time, the difference in the way people treated me, especially men, was overwhelming. And I was like, oh, this is why women do this. I thought this was totally stupid to do. But it's like, my God, like, no wonder women wear these dumb clothes and the makeup and stuff. It's like, you get treated better.
Well, I think that goes both ways, though, right? Like, there's such a thing as attractiveness privilege, and men certainly have it as well. Attractive men, you're Corinna, your face is like, what? No, but like attractive men versus...
Well, I just screwing up my face at the word privilege. It's an automatic reaction at this point.
Okay, fair. No, but I mean, it's legitimate. It's like people, you know, just see a pretty face and you treat that person nicer. You bestow more trust and competence or assumptions of competence on that person. Though maybe needed to your point, this can go the opposite direction for women who are unfortunately, unfairly often assumed to be less intelligent if they're more attractive. So that's not fair. But for men, attractiveness is only a positive.
But you're saying attractive, and I'm talking about, like, I was just as attractive, as far as I'm concerned, without any of this crap, right? My body was the same. My bone structure, my facial structure, all that was the same. But what this stuff did, it's like it paints it in a certain way. So it's cues, right? And of course, men have figured out, men respond to these cues. Like you said, they respond compulsively to these cues. Yeah. So anybody can wear these cues. Like, it's weird that somebody wearing, like a woman wearing a lot, like, yeah, if you got me and a woman that looks exactly like me, and one of us wore makeup and a wig and high heels, and the other one just stood there being healthy, you'd say
so the unhealthy one and the healthy one. Okay, keep going.
Well, you know, heels aren't healthy. They're not good for your feet. Makeup is terrible for your skin.
Yeah,
heels actually, or they accentuate whatever it is about a woman that indicates where she is in her ovulation cycle. I don't really understand the science of this, but like a lot of the accoutrements of femininity are basically just fertility signals. And I mean, it's just, yeah, I don't see it as unhealthy or anything wrong with it at all. It's just, yeah, what people are into. But yeah, I think
let's say one of them is actually fresh and natural, and the other one is wearing a bunch of synthetic stuff and putting her feet in strange directions. But anyway, they're going to say that one is the attractive one. They're going to be like, oh, this one's attractive. They're going to be exactly the same person. They're going to be like, oh, this one is attractive.
Yeah. Yeah. Because one is highlighting those fertility signals.
And you know, and fucking women too. But obviously men can highlight these fertility signals too. Men can easily wear these trappings. They can wear the heels and the makeup and
but that's
all
not
that.
That's not what signals fertility to women. What signals fertility or viability, reproductive viability to a woman is wealth and security. And so they get the nice car and, you know, show off whatever. It's that's how men's sex signal is like, look at how much physical security I can provide you. And women's sex signal as look at what's the word I was just using?
Fertile.
Anyway, fertile. There we go. Yeah. Yeah. So it's just sexual dimorphism at the, is that the right term? Anyway, it's all just reproductive sex signaling.
It is. Yeah. But still, these autogynephilic men, I guess they're really attracted to those cues. So yeah. When they woman up, that's what they woman up with.
Yeah. And so that's what you can see with, so autogynephilic men just wear their sexuality on their sleeve, right? So they embody what it is they find sexually appealing. And I think men could take a cue from looking at the way that FTMs talk about what they value in masculinity and then embody those things, if that makes sense, because those women are manifesting what they find attractive in men, right?
So what are you manifesting? Yeah. Like, do you have a car to show your fitness, your reproductive fitness?
No, I mean, I do have a car. It definitely doesn't make me look great, but
wait, what kind of car?
Well, I have a Chevy truck, and
all right.
I'm not gonna say more because I'm really afraid of, you know.
No. I'm not gonna come pop your tires, but I was gonna judge if it was like a, what's a really girly car?
A Mazda Miata.
Mazda Miata. Oh yeah. I was gonna judge, but it's a if you have a Chevy truck,
older,
I mean, that's
older Chevy.
That's pretty studly.
Yeah.
A lot of this is, I'm kind of I break the rule of my theory or whatever, because I was only attracted to men pre-transition, and then testosterone completely reversed my sexuality. So at the same time, I embodied what I was previously attracted to. I became attracted to women. So I don't know, again, that kind of, because my theory, right, is that the androphilia is what's at the root. But for me, when I took testosterone, the androphilia completely went away. And now I'm only externally attracted to women. Yet when I think about like detransitioning, that same, what I believe to be autoandrophilic gender dysphoria comes back. Like that feeling is still there, but I'm no longer attracted to men.
You have a, If my recollection is correct, please correct me if I'm not. You have a partner who's trans also, don't you?
Correct. Yep. Well, I'm attracted to butches and FTMs and
okay,
regular women as well. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So is that pseudo attraction?
So when I figured out that I was autoandrophilic, I certainly did, because I was already well understood pseudo attraction in autogynephiles. So that is where an autogynephilic trans woman dates and has sex with women, or dates and has sex with men, because that relationship or the sex act itself as well helps to manifest the female identity, right? Brings it to life in a way. And so that makes sense. That made perfect sense to me. Pseudo bisexual or meta attraction in AGPs. But then, so when I realized kind of what was at the root of AGP and that the exact same root was my dysphoria, I realized, okay, wait, then my gynophilia, my attraction to women is that meta attraction. And I don't believe it is, because again, I guess we're getting R-rated here. When AGPs talk about their attraction to men, they call it the faceless man. Like they don't picture a man. It's not about his body or any, they're not physically attracted to his body. They're attracted to the role he plays in their fantasy. Whereas with testosterone, I became intensely attracted to actual female anatomy, which was also weird. And again, it's gotta really be a lot of the testosterone, because not only was I only attracted to men before, I wasn't really all that worried about their bodies. Like like male anatomy didn't, I wasn't like super, like it wasn't about their bodies. It was just more about the romantic connection, like men or who I, you know, developed feelings for, fell in love with, etc. Their bodies was just inconsequential. That was their body, you know. Female bodies repulsed me. Like I was not going, that's why I would have been I would have been a lesbian, right? I would have been a butch. I wished I was a butch lesbian because that could have manifested my, that would have made my masculinity make sense. But I was absolutely, I was repulsed by my female anatomy. So why would I want to duplicate that? Why would I want to interact intimately with all the details of my body that I found repellent?
So
I,
well, I then, just wait a second.
Couldn't do it.
So like, that's kind of weird because every man that I've been with, every heterosexual man, it's the only kind I'd be with, right? They were all grossed out by men. Oh, right. Wait, no, that makes sense. Never mind.
Right.
That's
out
why
by,
they
like,
were with
yeah,
women.
Okay.
Right. They were with women.
Right.
Right. That's why they wouldn't be with other women.
What does grossed out mean, though?
I mean, I don't know what it's like to be a man who's grossed out by other men. I don't know. They just are like, ah, gross. Oh, men are so gross. Gross.
But men change with each other in locker rooms and they don't like tip over into the garbage can and throw up.
Oh, no. I think in the context of sexuality, like sexual vulnerability or like getting close and sensual, I'm sure they have no problem just being buds with their buddies, but getting, you know, touching and petting and smelling and all that sort of stuff. Gross.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think I have that, I guess, is that in the male part of the brain where that's how, like, whatever I'm not sexually attracted to, I'm grossed out by the thought of sexually interacting with. And so now that's how I feel about men physically. It's just like, that's disgusting, which is how I felt about women when I wasn't attracted to them.
You attribute this to testosterone.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not, what are
not
they
convinced.
Called? The people who study bodies. I'm not a botanist. So I don't really know. Why are you laughing at me? I'm
botanist.
I'm admitting my ignorance and I'm being laughed at.
You are admitting your ignorance.
Cruelty. I'm gonna shrink away like a daisy here.
Oh, I wouldn't know. I wouldn't know if you're going to shrink like a daisy because I'm not a botanist.
You're not a biologist, are you?
This is why I listen to heterodorks, by the way.
I'm not a political scientist either, but I know what a demagogue is. Anyway. Hi, Kelly. Anyway.
That's a man's name.
It is a man's name. So is Jay. Yeah. So is Jay. Anyway, I have the sense that what we understand as being sexually differentiated human sexuality is driven substantially by the presence or absence of testosterone.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we talk about men have paraphilias, but then I look at women who take testosterone and then develop behavior that is, to my botanist knowledge, indistinguishable from the behavior of men that have paraphilias. And I go, well, prior to them taking testosterone, they didn't have these behaviors. Now they take testosterone and they have these behaviors. Like, it seems...
Can you give me an example? Because I'm not, so as I understand, women don't like FTMs don't develop paraphilias. I could be wrong.
Well, just, you know, this is going to sound like just cherry picking anecdotes, but in fact, that's what it is. But here locally, we had a female to male childcare worker.
Oh,
get nabbed for diddling a child.
Yeah.
She killed herself in custody. When you look at Reddit, if you're cherry picking, right, anecdotes, there are women, female to male, trans identified women who talk about all sorts of like compulsive sexual behaviors that they engage in. There's a whole Reddit group that somebody sent me to look at, which was shocking to me, which is female to male trans identified women with humiliation fetishes.
So Was it the Punish FDMs or whatever that was?
I don't remember the name of it, but
so
probably something like that.
So, okay, I have a whole theory on this. The one, as I say, paraphilia, that's common in women. And I struggle with the semantics here because I'm not sure that this is a paraphilia, but masochism. Masochism is very common in women, right? And I think this is especially going to be the case from someone who's been exposed to violent, degrading porn, right? With the whole, this is a very common phenomenon of FTMs who are into extreme BDSM and being on the being the passive, the submissive partner is incredibly common. And I think the reason for that is, one, it's kind of common in females, masochism is. Two, they are traumatized by porn that depicts this kind of sexual behavior. And then the trans community, which is incredibly sex positive, let's say, to put it too politely, it's just a hyper-sexualizing. And so you give these girls male levels of testosterone, and they just become very sexual. And excuse me, I missed a part there. Really important part. A lot of them are transitioning to flee what they see as being the sex doll punching bag they see in a lot of porn. So transition basically shields them from that, essentially. But also once they've transitioned, now they're not actually women. So they can engage in that kind of sex that they want to be having, that they are partially traumatized into from the porn and partially maybe already have a penchant for masochism. I'm not phrasing this well.
Wait, so are you saying that for them, sex is someone punching a punching bag? As long as they're female, they're going to be the punching bag. If they transition, they don't have to be the punching bag anymore. So now they can get down to the business of punching the punching bag?
No. I'm saying that the sex acts that they're seeking out are still to be the receptive and often degraded one in the sexual scenario. But if they're trans, it's about the language. That's all it is. It's like they're adverse to being a woman. Like they're adverse to being a heterosexual woman. But if they're a gay trans boy, they can have that kind of sex without it making them without basically have agency. If they're engaging in it as a gay trans man, they have agency and they're therefore enabled to partake in the kind of sex that they actually want to be having. But if they're a woman, it's just being done to them, essentially.
Yeah, so that's what we call heterosexual with extra steps.
Oh, exactly. Exactly. But yeah.
These poor girls, because like that, I mean, I feel terrible for these incredibly annoying women that call themselves gay boys, B-O-I, or soft boys. Like they're heterosexual. It's heartbreaking. It's like the men that they are going to get with are heterosexual men who are going to say that they're gay men or bisexual so that these women feel okay about themselves and can have this. But it's like, why is that so heartbreaking? It's heartbreaking for me. It's just.
It's like they see a lack of equality in a male-female heterosexual dynamic. And so they think if they're trans, they have subverted that somehow. They've equaled the playing field, and yet they still engage in much more toxic and, yeah, basically they end up engaging in the same kinds of sex acts that they're trying to avoid, but with men who, like, are not going to, like, form an actual long-term relationship with them. Yeah, they think they're avoiding something that they're actually just making much worse.
Right.
Do we have a sense from detransitioners that's what they experienced? Are there any female detransitioners who talk about sexuality this way, as far as you know?
No. So I'm writing something right now. So a lot of the detransitioners that we see now are people who had a very binary understanding of their transition. They basically had a problem that they thought would be solved by, like, they had a binary, right? They were going, okay, I'm going to transition to be a man, right? And then this didn't work. Either it makes my dysphoria worse or it just didn't solve the underlying issues, like just whatever the case may be. I think Grace is one example, one counter example of this. She was a transitioner who kind of had like the more trans queer theory kind of a, like view of her transition, more of a non-binary kind of transition motivator. But for a larger proportion of what we're seeing now are people who had a very kind of binary understanding of what they were embarking upon. And so when they're undoing it, they can be like, okay, that was a mistake. It didn't make sense. It didn't solve the problem. That was a mistake going back. What I'm observing in this demographic that I'm commenting on, there are people who have adopted the ideology. It's very queer theory driven. It's very ideological. It's very just about language and subverting gender norms. And it's not really about having dysphoria and seeking to solve it. It's queering the gender binary. It's a political religious cause, right? And so these people, they're going to detransition. I'm not sure what that's going to look like, but it's going to be very different because they transitioned out of they're dedicating their bodies to a cause. They're not trying to solve dysphoria. And so it's not a case of just, that was a mistake, I need to undo it and detransition. It's a case of having to let go your entire world view, your entire social network, your righteous calling. Everything about their lives is wrapped up in this trans identity. And the medical aspect is just one facet of it. So if they accept that they regret transition, they have to undo everything that they believed in for all these years. And a lot of them are also kind of like, it's like an MLM kind of deal where they're proselytizing the religion, right? It's like, it's bad to be cis. It's great to be trans. It's a recruitment effort. And a lot of these people also have put themselves into positions of power to codify their religion. Chase Strangio being a good example of one of these people who has a very religious and not medical reason for transitioning. They are the people who are writing the American Psychological Association's guidelines for transgender healthcare, or people who do not have a binary perspective on their transition. So yeah, the people who have a binary understanding of their transition are going to have an easier time psychologically detransitioning and reckoning with the mistake that was made and the damage that was done to them. But the people who did it for an ideological cause and have been spending the last many years of their lives advocating this ideological cause, it's going to be a different story. Hmm. Yeah, because I think there's two distinct groups of people here that are people who transition to solve, again, that internal problem where they feel like there's a problem with their body, usually, again, caused by auto-heterosexuality. Then there are people, mostly girls. Boys don't seem to get wrapped up in these kind of social-political, this one anyway, the social contagion aspect. It's purely ideological. And so how do you detransition from an ideology? Well, you renounce, become a heretic, but yeah, anyway, it's a different situation with them.
What would you say if somebody said, just, Aaron, you're wrong about this stuff. You're just wrong.
Oh, people tell me that all the time. And I'm okay with that.
Yeah, okay.
No, I mean, I definitely listen to all sorts of perspectives. I read all sorts of perspectives, but I've been in this for years. I first met these people in person in 2017 because I started dating one of them, and then learned a lot about this worldview and this framework. And I've been just studying it online since. It's only in the last very recent time frame that I came to understand the whole sexology and like what's driving the boys and the men and everything. And then, oh, wow, mine's actually of that source. I've been spending the vast majority of my time understanding this, what we call RODGD, rapid onset gender dysphoria, which again has much less to do with physical dysphoria and everything to do with a political religion, essentially. They just come forward and say they have dysphoria because that's how they conceptualize it to the cishets, right? And what do you have to say to get medical transition approved and whatnot. But when you spend time with them, understanding them, reading how they conceptualize all this, it's a political religion, much more than a problem with their bodies.
So a few weeks ago, Joe Burgo published something, I think it was on Reality's Last Stand, about autogynephilia and I think social withdrawal. Is that what he called it? These boys that are withdrawing from society. And his article had a lot about fathers. I think Joe has talked about fathers and issues, I guess, issues with attachments to fathers having something to do with autogynephilic transition. Did you read that? Karina, even you look confused.
Yeah, I read something recently by Joe Burgo, but that wasn't my takeaway from it.
What was your takeaway?
Well, I feel like I have to go pull it up now because...
Yeah, this was like two articles ago. It wasn't his most recent article. He's doing a series about it, but this was like the first
series. Oh, I might have missed it then.
Yeah. But I just remember reading that, you know, I should really read it again if I'm going to talk about it. But I remember reading it and thinking, maybe it was their attachment to mothers. It was something like... It was like this.
Oh, that's different.
This need to create in yourself the thing that you're missing.
Yeah, I did read that.
Okay, yeah. So it was mothers.
It wasn't fathers.
Sorry, it was mothers. Yeah. So I read that and I thought about my not good, not good relationships with my father and just early attachment problems.
Oh, wow. You projected yourself into his article.
I did. I projected myself in. I mean, I didn't do it on purpose. I was just reading it and I was like, huh, I wonder if something similar was happening with me. So, Aaron, with all of these, you know, do you ever think about the psychological aspects of it that maybe, you know, beyond society, beyond your social role, beyond degrading porn, there might just be something about your own psychology and early experiences bonding or failing to bond that might have something to do with this?
So, yeah, I mean, I think about the psychology behind the, let's say, auto-heterosexuality a lot, which, again, I think is a completely different thing than what's going on with most of the girls. That's a completely different category.
Wait, you're saying most of the girls aren't auto-heterosexual?
No. It's completely ideological.
Okay.
It is a cult. They have joined a cult, not for internal reasons, but external reasons. I mean, it's solving a psychological need for sure, absolutely, as all cults do, but it's not to do with problems based in their own bodies.
Or minds.
Well, for some, sure, but, you know. Anyway, as far as, I disagree with Joe quite a bit on his theories about autogynephilia. I think, but I do think that, yes, it is solving an external need. Internally, as I understand it, the one thing that's very, very common in people with auto heterosexuality is autism spectrum disorder. Very, very common in both males and females. And my theory is that it is a autist's attempt to solve an external problem internally. Autistic people live in their heads and do tend to have trouble relating and identifying with others. So if you can solve those social sexual needs in-house, this is not a conscious decision. This is a subconscious process, I believe, that happens to different degrees. And I don't believe that autism is the only cause, AGP or AP, not at all. If I am autistic, I'm very, very slightly autistic. And there are people who clearly are not on the spectrum at all who have autosexuality. But I do believe that it's largely caused by a subconscious attempt to solve an external social need internally. And this happens pre-puberty, by the way.
As we established earlier, I'm not a botanist, but there's one thing that has never really clicked for me about particularly autogynephilias as a explanation. There's gaps in it. Not that it's discredited, but there's parts that don't seem to completely make sense. So, and you said you disagreed with Joe Burgo about this, so there would not be any point in me having you explain this if you don't agree with it. But I think one of the things that Joe Burgo was talking about, and by the way, something that I could see, like Nina did, of having a parent that's not present or acting in the parent role and feeling that absence or that need, absolutely has a psychological component. I don't understand at all how something that is such a clear psychological component translates into sexuality. Like a sexual compulsion like a paraphilia.
Well, what is sexuality if not psychological?
I don't think it's... To me, they seem like they're different things. Like a person who has an ordinary sexuality, which is to have a heterosexual orientation, which is to be attracted to the opposite sex. That is not psychological. But it is a sexuality. Heterosexuality, there's a compulsion to engage in procreative behaviors in order to produce offspring, right? That's deeply, deeply, botanical, let's say. And if we believe that some people are born with an orientation that makes them sexual, have that sexual attraction, that compulsion to engage in sexual behaviors, but with somebody who is of the same sex, if that is a way that somebody is born, then that's not psychological either. So when you pose the question, you might not agree with that. By the way, I think maybe we can enrage a lot of people because I don't think that people are necessarily born gay either.
Right.
Any more than people are born alcoholics, right? You might be born with a more of a disposition towards a type of behavior, but you're not born to necessarily fulfill that behavior. But let's swing back to that to argue that, because I want to talk about this other part though. You asked, what is sexuality if it's not psychological? And my answer is, it's by and large natural. And if there are unusual sexualities that we're saying are paraphilias, maybe you're saying, what is a paraphilia if it's not psychological? But sexuality seems like it's something that's deeper than a psychological level.
Again, yeah, this is my issue with semantics. So I agree with you that sexuality as the good Lord intended it is heterosexual, not because that's the moral way to go, but that's how we make the babies.
As God intended.
But yeah, that's just our base primordial drive. So if our sexuality works in such a way that doesn't result in offspring, something has gone wrong. That's not a judgment. That's not, you know, a condemnation. That's not saying, oh, filthy perverts. It's something's gone wrong, right? If the kind of sex you want to engage in does not reproduce, something's gone wrong. Where, though? So I disagree with you.
Even that's not clear, though, Aaron, because we're a social animal, and if individual members don't have procreative behavior or productively procreative behavior, that doesn't mean that their sexual behavior is wrong if the population continues to grow.
Or on a planet of 8 billion humans with limited resources,
there's always the
possibility that people are sensing something and keeping themselves out of the gene pool to preserve
That's
the health of those that are left.
So when I say something went wrong, I don't mean that it is wrong or that it's a problem. Even it could have social benefits, right? But it's still our evolution, our base reason for having a sexuality is to reproduce, right? So if our sexuality works in a way that's counter to that, I don't want to upset a new layer or send the wrong message.
Yeah, not morally right or wrong. You're talking by the design of our DNA has a certain purpose in it.
Right. So I do believe that some, certainly males and possibly females, are indeed born gay. It's a kind of, it's a hormonal, it's something that's happened hormonally to either hyperfeminize or hypermasculinize in the womb. That's some. That explains some homosexuality. Again, I'm not sure if it exists in females. It probably does, but I'm sure it does exist in males. But then there is also homosexuality that is indeed caused post-birth. By what? I don't know. But yeah, I agree with you that in some instances, homosexuality is not inborn, not innate. It is some early life experiences have caused it. I feel the exact same way about autogynephilia. Someone could be predisposed to develop this, such as like, I was going to say autism, but I'm also thinking that that's kind of environmentally caused as well, and is not necessarily an inborn.
Yeah. And you know that there are some proponents of AGP theory that believe that some people are born to be AGP.
Yeah.
I think Michael Bailey said something akin to that, although don't quote me on that. Instead, go listen to our episode, which Nina will kindly link in the show notes now that I've mentioned it. Thank you, Nina.
You're welcome.
I disagree with Mike Bailey all the time. He's one of my favorite people to disagree with.
Right. So do you want to say anything about the kerfuffle that happened on Twitter? There are so many Twitter kerfuffles, and they're so big when they happen, and then they pass so that we forget all about them. But there was one a couple weeks ago where Stella O'Malley said a lot of lesbians. What did she say? A lot of lesbians
get a sexual charge. Yeah, something like that.
She said very few women have penises. Oh, wait, that's what you said. That's what you said.
That's what which of us said.
Well, that's what I said when I said that that's something that you should say.
That I should say that very few women have penises.
Right, because you got canceled for saying no.
No women have penises. Yeah. Well, I'm not there yet.
If you had said just very, very few, almost none.
Very few women have penises.
Yeah. Which I think is a lot better than the Stonewall line, which is that some women have penises.
Yeah. Vanishingly few women.
Yeah. Almost none.
Almost none. Yeah. Okay. Sure. I'm so tired.
Yeah. Stella O'Malley said that a lot of lesbians fetishize masculinity or something along those lines.
Yeah. She's right.
Yeah. And you alone were just, you were tweeting like, she's right. And everyone was losing their minds already because they considered this a very lesbophobic thing to say.
I considered it a lesbophobic thing too, Nina, because I've been doing a lot of research online. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you that lesbians wear a lot of lipstick, wear a lot of eyeshadow and mascara, wear almost nothing but lingerie. So the idea that they're masculine in any sense is completely discredited by the online videos.
Well, thank you for watching. Thank you for doing that research so I don't have to.
Yeah. Stella O'Malley doesn't know what she's talking about.
No, I think the venomous response to that, the over-the-top venomous response to that, doesn't that strain of insecurity to anyone else? That's just the vibe that I got. Like I was telling you guys on Twitter, the person who launched that crusade against Stella for saying that is a femme lesbian who has confirmed to me that she has had multiple butch partners who indeed display behaviors of AAP. And that's something that we've discussed privately. Like we used to, like, it was like she was one of the people that bounced a lot of these ideas off of originally, and she was 100% not too long before this whole kicked off, she was right there with me arguing with Joe Burgo trying to explain how AAP does indeed exist in females. So I reached out to her. I was like, why is suddenly Stella so lesbophobic for saying what you yourself have, you know, multiple times agreed exists? And she said, well, if Stella had meant that just that subset of lesbians, she should have said so. It's like, this seems like all she said was a lot. Like, this is not her. Anyway, there seems to be some sort of social political motivation behind I generally told her, to me, it reads like some kind of resentment about Stella. Like it's like a relay race, right? And Stella happens to be the one holding the baton as the finish line is reached, and I think some people are angry about that. She said, no, that's absolutely not the case. It was just lesbophobic. I've had multiple DM conversations with self-identified lesbians. Female sexuality is just not that concrete, and so many lesbians have been with men in the past or are attracted to men. They just don't act on it because prefer the intimacy that they feel in relationships with women, and they just don't. Female sexuality is just not as concrete as male sexuality. And so I've got all these gay men who are piling on me basically saying, no, lesbians are attracted to men. It's like, dude, you don't know what the fuck you're talking about. Like, you, I mean, it's these semantics that people cling to. It's like, oh, if you're a lesbian, that means you're a same-sex attracted female. So anyone who's a lesbian is therefore not at all attracted to men. It's like, this is just not how human sexuality works, let alone female sexuality. Yeah.
Right. But I can totally see why women are trying to defend this line, because...
Yes. Yes.
Because they just don't want to have to have sex with men. They don't want to be pressured into it. And as long as people like respect this line and just go like, okay, she's not interested in, you know, lesbians are not interested in men in any way, shape or form, then they'll leave them alone. But people people are never going to leave women alone. Men are never going to leave women alone.
Well, no, then how would we make the babies?
Men are terrible.
It's men's fault. Men are terrible.
Women have no agency. It's all, it's a man's world. Women are just the objects that populate the men's world.
Women would like to have their boundaries respected. And I guess this is a strategy to have a boundary respected, even if it's not quite accurate, I guess.
Right. Hmm. Right. No, this is also in the context of people who've been fighting this whole onslaught of, you know, trans lesbians, you know, and so that's where they're coming from, is like, you know, no male is lesbian. And so they hear multiple things when I say, no, some lesbians are attracted to men. Just don't acknowledge it.
Can I veer this car into traffic for a second?
Oh, I thought we were already into oncoming traffic, but yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk about ideologies that are grounded in collectivist concepts versus individualist concepts. It's totally fine for a person to say, hey, I feel like my boundaries need to be defended in this case. But I think that there's a lot of people in this conversation who elect themselves to be the spokesperson for whichever collective identity they have self-selected into. So whether they are a same-sex attracted lesbian or a lesbian who's actually bisexual or an aspiring lesbian like Nina, who's actually straight, that these individuals say,
I had to become a man to become a lesbian. Sorry, go on.
Yeah.
I was going to say, lesbians, I'm sorry. Don't worry, I don't call myself a lesbian.
All roads lead to lesbianism. When somebody says, oh, how dare, like you had people harassing you, Aaron. Lesbians are not attracted to men, period. Well, if that person is a lesbian, I have no problem with somebody saying, I'm not attracted to men, period.
Right.
And other lesbians I know are not attracted to men, period. But then somebody says, hey, there's this whole identity group that you've offended. I'm a member of that identity group, which is how I happen to know that you've offended all of us. Right? So now you have to pay, because you've offended not just one individual. You have offended an entire collective group.
I mean, that's happening, but like, lesbian is the word for women that have no sexual interest in men.
No, it's a group identity.
I mean, lots of words have meanings and then they are used as like anarchists, right? Anarchist is a group identity. There are many people that identify as anarchists that are very hierarchical.
Yes, that's a perfect example, Nina. There are a lot of lesbian anarchists.
Or there's people that identify themselves as anti-fascists who are pretty fascistic.
They demand everybody else also be an anti-fascist in the way that they are.
Yes.
Under pain of violence.
We've talked about this before. Like, you know, when words are used for community identity, they may or may not have the actual meaning. Like, I think an anarchist is someone who believes no one's fit to boss over anybody else. That's what an anarchist is. Against hierarchies.
Yeah.
But yeah, people who identify as anarchists are frequently nothing like that.
That's right. And there's a lot of lesbians, because we've met them before, not the lesbians who listen to this program, who are all gold star. Who even knows what a gold star lesbian is? Because lesbians are only attracted to women.
Okay. Yes.
I mean, imagine if there was any other conception of what a lesbian is. You could maybe create a TV show. I would call it the L word, because that's something that would cause a lot of controversy.
Okay, so everything you're saying is true and worthy of discussion, and yet also chips away at this boundary that women long for.
Oh.
So they're...
And you're saying that is the self-elected...
Representative of women.
Of women, yeah.
And representative of...
I see you're refusing to share that with Aaron.
Enforcing the purity of the word lesbian, okay? In that particular use. Of course, it's been used other ways, and...
So, Nina, as a same-sex-attracted female, I think I get to be the speaker on this one.
I do think so, actually, yes. I think you are the most lesbian of us all, for sure.
No, I mean, what I...
But you weren't always. You're not a gold star lesbian. You're some kind of weird ex-het. What do they call it? The bisexuals that prefer...
Oh!
Women. Feb femme?
Yeah.
Is that what they call it?
Yeah, not exactly femme, though. That's not going to work.
No, you're not femme, but what is it? There's women that bisexuals that prefer... I think female bisexual prefers female. I don't remember what it is. You can never be a lesbian, Aaron. You can only be a bisexual.
The hill that I die on is that males and females are very, very different, right? And like that's kind of, this is why I try to appeal to them on this level, is like we're trying to pretend that female sexuality works the same way male sexuality does. And that, from a certain perspective, is misogynistic. Like we need to acknowledge the fact that female psychology and female sexuality are very different than that of males, and they're trying to apply this. I think the heterosexual homosexual dichotomy, and Stella herself has said this, and she didn't get canceled for it, surprisingly. Maybe she'll read canceled after I say this, but she said a couple of times on the Gender Wider Legs podcast is that the heterosexual homosexual dichotomy seems one that only applies to males and doesn't really transcribe onto females. And it kind of shocked me when she first said that, but the more I think about it, and the more I observe, the more entirely accurate that is. I agree with the gender criticals 100% that focusing on the fact that sex is very real and tangible and material and important is a way to combat the ideology, but also that applies to our psychology and sexuality as well. They're very different things.
Let me ask a question. Because we're not supposed to use this term anymore, but maybe it needs to come back into vogue. Based on what you're saying, Aaron, would the term sexual preference for women make more sense than sexual orientation?
So I think the problem I just don't like the semantics either way, because it's orientation. It makes sense applied to, I really appreciated Mike Bailey's paper on this, what is sexual orientation and do women have one? It's a good paper, but I don't like the methods that he used, because he determined that women don't have sexual orientations because, so he showed men porn, right? Same gay porn and, so lesbian porn and gay porn. He stands by this method of you show them, like, because if you show het porn, you can't figure out which one they're getting off on. Is it the man or the woman? So he shows gay porn and lesbian porn. And then so the gynophilic males have a phallometric response, right? They get erections to the two women. And then the gay ones get a response to the gay porn. And straight men have no response to the gay porn, vice versa, right? It's like it's pretty clear what they're sexually attracted to. But when you show women porn, they get sexually aroused to all of it. And he's like, oh, well, so women don't have a sexual orientation. And I think, and so again, one of the things I'd like to tell Mike Bailey he's wrong about is you can't measure females' sexuality by showing them porn, because female sexuality just doesn't work that way. I mean, yeah, females find porn arousing, certainly, as clear demonstrated in that test. But But female sexuality is really, really rooted in, like we were talking about at the beginning of the episode, relationships, identities, dynamics. And so it's not even a case of orientation. Like Nina and I both, we are, I was originally strictly attracted to men. I did not find women sexually attractive at all. And now the vice versa has happened. So I don't fall into this, you know, testosterone could have a lot to do with that. But I'm not saying all women work this way, but just observing female sexuality, it's so driven by dynamics and context and relationships and has much less to do with what kind of body does this person have. So that's why it's just a completely different thing than male sexuality.
Hmm. Yeah, sounds very different.
All right. Anything to add, Aaron?
No, I said a lot.
Anything we didn't get to? All right. Well, TERFs and trannies, thank you for listening. Oh, wait, we need to ask if you're working on a brilliant book. You have a podcast. We need to
link to the podcast. Go on. Yeah. Year two of the Transparency podcast that I do with Aaron Kimberly. I have been tentatively working on a book on the whole Rajni phenomenon, but I keep getting distracted by other things. But I just have a bad habit of like tweeting my thoughts rapid fire instead of like putting them into you know, long form ideas. So I'm trying to get the discipline to do that. So, but yeah, we'll see if it ever materializes or if I just keep tweeting contrarian things.
Aaron, thank you. And TERFs and trannies, isn't it cool that you can disagree with Aaron and the world will not end? Go engage with Aaron on Twitter.
Yes, please.
Thank you, TERFs and trannies and alpacas.
Yeah, and Jews and Gentiles. We haven't talked about that for a while.
No, we haven't. But somebody said that we should, so I guess we'll have to. Don't you have a friend who's part of Jews Against Israel? We should get him on.
Oh, my gosh. All right. I'm so tired. Bye.
All right. Bye.
Hey, everybody. Thank you for listening to Heterodorks. You can support us by visiting our page at anchor.fm/heterodorks or by supporting Nina Paley at patreon.com/Nina Paley. You can also support us by writing a review on your favorite podcast site, such as Apple Podcasts. Thank you.